On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
It is a pretty happy morning for you if you are a Tyrone fan, because you basically can't move for the Sunday papers without seeing different photographs, whether it's the Sam Maguire being lofted by the captain yesterday, or as it is on the front page of the Sunday Independent, Niall Kelly and Peter Hart celebrating with their arms around each other's shoulders after their victory yesterday. The two men among Tyrone's stars yesterday as they won Sam Maguire for the fourth time. The main story though on the front page of the Sunday Independent: blackmail threat alleged by GP in Varadkar leak. We're told that a high-profile GP and a friend of the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has alleged to Gardaí that he was a victim of an intimidating blackmail attempt which was designed to damage the Fine Gael leader. This is Dr. Matthew O'Toole, who's at the centre of an ongoing investigation into Mr. Varadkar's leaking of a confidential government document to him in 2019. He claims that an attempt was made to blackmail him earlier this year by a man whose name has been supplied to Gardaí. It is alleged by Dr. O'Toole that this person claimed he had a content relating to the GP of a sexual nature, including photographs, which Dr. O'Toole denies exist. He also told Gardaí that the man who allegedly tried to blackmail him insinuated that the GP was involved in some kind of fraudulent activity linked to his charity work, which again, Dr. O'Toole told Gardaí is entirely untrue. We're also told on the front page of the Sunday Independent that there will be two separate funerals this week for the three family members who died during the murder-suicide in Lixnaw in County Kerry last week. Eileen O'Sullivan and her son Jamie will be remembered at a joint service, and there will be a separate service later in the week for Mossy O'Sullivan, who killed his partner and son before taking his own life last Monday night. And also on the front page in the corner of the page, Leo Varadkar is to block attempts to increase taxes on the self-employed so as to fund a 7-year delay in increasing the state pension age to 67, more of which we'll hear about in just a minute. The front page of the Business Post, I mentioned that if you were a Tyrone fan who's also a supporter of Sinn Féin, that it's really good news. How's this for good news? For the first time since the Business Post started running election tracker polls with Red Sea, which I think is 2003, Sinn Féin, for the first time ever, is the most popular party in this series of polls. The latest Red Sea poll ahead of the Dáil's return on Wednesday shows Sinn Féin has consolidated its position with 29% of the vote for the third poll in a row. That means it's 1 point ahead of Fine Gael, which drops by 2 points to 28 in the wake of the damaging controversy about the cancelled appointment of Catherine Zappoin as a UN special envoy. They are both quite a distance ahead of Fianna Fáil, which is on 13%. Its support has fallen since entering the government coalition as the largest party. And as the piece says, it's the first time Sinn Féin has led a poll since Red Sea began its tracking for the Business Post all the way back in 2003. And also on the topic of Catherine Zappoin, one interesting note from the Business Post today on an angle which had largely, it seemed, had been put to bed. Government officials, these are officials from the Department of Tourism, told a state body that hotels could not hold outdoor events ahead of Catherine Zappoin's Merion Hotel party, according to newly released documents under Freedom of Information. They also failed to answer additional requests for clarity on the same period, same issue rather, over a period of 2 months. It's documents which have been obtained by the Business Post under Freedom of Information, exchanges between Fáilte Ireland and the Department of Tourism, where they're trying to get to the bottom of exactly whether the provision for outdoor gatherings also means that outdoor hospitality, the likes of which might be organised in a hotel, would actually be permissible. The original advice from the Department of Tourism, it seems, is that they would not be permissible, and there was 2 months of unsuccessful attempts to try and get a little bit of clarity as to whether they would be permitted. All of that, of course, before the Attorney General stepped in and determined that in fact they were permissible all along. Also very briefly on the front of the Business Post, Ireland must secure an agreement that the OECD's landmark overhaul of global corporate tax rules is the end of the line for at least a decade before committing to the process. That is the advice of PwC. They're basically advising that you can't have too much doubt or too much tumult about the corporate tax regime in Ireland, and if you're going to change it, you have to be able to assure people that there'll be no further changes coming down the line. Also on the front page of the Sunday Times, more political polling. They've done a separate poll, this time with behaviour and attitudes. Mary Lou McDonald now tops the satisfaction ratings, which I think is possibly the first time that she has been so clear at the top of those rankings. And also, again, Sinn Féin, the most popular party in their poll. Sinn Féin is 10 points ahead of Fine Gael, with another bit of a distance back to Fianna Fáil. Leo Varadkar's personal satisfaction rating has fallen 9 points to 39%, and Fine Gael is down 2 to 23. It's their first opinion poll since the whole Catherine Zappoin controversy. And we're also told the Defence Forces firing range in Oranmore County, Galway, has been selected as the possible location for a mega fab Intel semiconductor plant that could create 10,000 jobs. Should clarify that mega fab isn't meant as a kind of an honorific there. They're not saying that it's like super brilliant. Mega fab is actually industry jargon. Fab is a some sort of factory module you learn. So there's always something new every day. Finally, for now, the Irish Mail on Sunday. Varadkar's bid to buy back votes. We're told that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar will launch a bid to win back public support with a raft of new vote-grabbing measures at the Fine Gael Think-In, which gets underway in Trim in the next few hours. Mr. Varadkar will call for a series of welfare and pension packages in the budget to offset the soaring prices and the impact inflation is having on people's incomes. We're also told the Fine Gael leader will also oppose massively proposed PRSI hikes for the self-employed, and he'll call for an extension to supports for sectors which are still recovering from the pandemic. That is your potted tour of what's making the front pages of this morning's newspapers. We're joined in studio by Sheila Riley, who is the head of editorial development at the Irish Examiner, and making his debut on the show, very big welcome, to John Lee, who's executive political editor at DMG Media, which is the Daily Mail group in Ireland. Thank you both very much for coming in this morning. John, I'll start with yourself. It's very difficult not to look beyond the two political polls and generally the idea that they present a fairly rosy picture for Sinn Féin and a fairly torrid one for the government parties.
The challenge for Sinn Féin now will be to turn these positive poll ratings, which are consistent over quite a period since the general election, into seats. Whether they can do that, political polling in recent times, Fianna Fáil didn't capitalise it on in 2020 on their positive ratings just before the general election, which in fairness did plummet as the day approached. Fine Gael never have. Leo Varadkar has not translated his positive poll ratings and of that more of that later into popularity at the polls. Sinn Féin, though, undoubtedly, as we know, had massive, unprecedented votes come their way in 2020. There is a move towards them. On those figures, a very blunt assessment. One would have to ask if they can get much more than 50 seats, 55, 56 seats would put them in a position where, of course, they would be the lead party in government and then seeking a coalition partner. So
if they can find another 25 seats elsewhere to make up the numbers.
The difficulty would be for Sinn Féin in the future, and they'll admit this themselves. If you look at the by-election, the most recent by-election, Dublin Bay South, the vote they got there almost mirrored the general election, which has shown as of summer 2021, they have not broken through in some of those resolutely middle class upper income areas, and that will prove that would be the area in which they prove themselves. They'll pick up seats in places like, one would assume, like Waterford, perhaps in my own constituency, Dublin Fingal, which may be split.
Ryan Segan, is that the constituency that Louise O'Reilly is currently in?
Yes, which may be split after the.
So it's currently a five seater, and they could split it into two threes, and then you'd have potentially one Fingal, in each of the three.
Yeah, Fingal is one of the most rapidly growing population areas in the country, and there is a census next year, and there will be redraws of constituencies. You may see two, three seaters there. Across North Dublin, they have had massive increases in their votes. So there will be an increase in seats. Whether the era of overall majorities is completely gone in Irish politics, you would have to assume it is.
Yeah.
And talk right now of Sinn Féin getting 60 seats. They're not quite there yet because they've a long way to go when it comes to middle class areas.
Well, doesn't the big question then arise if they were to get somewhere in the region of 60 seats, and we're operating on the basis that it's a Dáil of the current size. In fact, after the census, there's a fair chance the Dáil will get bigger. But let's just presume we're sticking with the current figures for now. A Dáil of 160 seats, and maybe Sinn Féin can get 60. Doesn't the classic problem up until now have been that if Sinn Féin were to capitalise on the support that they've got, it will probably be at the expense of other like-minded parties with whom they'd probably end up governing. So every seat that Sinn Féin might potentially win is a seat lost by the people that they need to share power with.
What we're seeing in Irish politics is increasing fragmentation. I interviewed Micheál Martin back in February, and I was proposing some of the things a lot of people had done, and we were discussing it here, that Sinn Féin would increase their popularity over time at their expense, less at Fine Gael's expense. He felt the way the Dáil is set up, the way funding is now set up in politics, that what he felt we will see is parties like the Social Democrats, Labour, who are now a small party, unfortunately for them, and other smaller parties increase their vote share, and it'll fragment more.
Mm.
Feeling, as you point out, that Sinn Féin mightn't have those that huge area to expand into.
So do you agree? Do you share that analysis then?
Sinn Féin are being, and I deal with them a lot, one will probably raise their eyebrows, someone who works for the Daily Mail, being friendly with people in Sinn Féin, but they are an opposition party. And
be friends with everyone, John, we all know that in this game.
There are no friends in politics, as you well know, Gavin. But they do, they are politicians. When they get into power, they want to stay in power.
Mm.
So, you know, they are, and one would look for, they're becoming more amenable to policies that will keep them there. Whether they can, they've never been in government before. Their performance in government in Northern Ireland has not been outstanding.
Mm.
And this aura of infallibility they seem to have at the moment is very easy to maintain in opposition. As we approach a general election, people will have big decisions to make. Whether the population, and we often see the population move as a mob, for want of a better word, they decide who they want to see in government. Whether they're ready to put Sinn Féin in government with a huge amount of seats, we will see. Because I feel a lot of the vote that went to Sinn Féin in the last general election was more about the deficiencies of the two major parties, which may well be solved by the time the next general election rolls around. They may have new leaders, both parties.
Mm. We'll stay on the Sinn Féin theme for a little while, because there's bigger questions inside the papers about Fianna Fáil's identity, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the hour. And then, of course, Leo Varadkar's stance against any increase in PRSI. So we'll get to that later again. So, Sheila, sticking with yourself just for Sinn Féin for the moment, one thing that's really striking about the Sunday Times poll today is that Leo Varadkar's personal satisfaction rating is down by 9 points to 39, which means that Mary Lou MacDonald on 48 now remains quite by some distance beyond the margin of error the most popular of the party leaders. And then I suppose a question that arises is, how do you translate one person's popularity into gains across the board whenever the time comes?
Which, this is it. I mean, and John's after kind of covering a lot of that there, the challenges that are going to face Sinn Féin to try and turn all of these statistics into meaningful seats is really the big issue that's facing them now, you know. I think Leo will be probably appalled to find himself there in the satisfaction ratings behind Micheál Martin, Alan Kelly as well, ahead of him. That certainly won't sit well. And the reality is that there has to be some kind of, this was inevitable, if you like, given the torrid summer that Fine Gael have had and the gaffes that have been made. And I suppose there would be an argument, many people would say, that Varadkar kind of escaped the worst of it, if you know what I mean. And you've left kind of Simon Coveney facing the motion of no confidence, and you've the Taoiseach out defending Simon Coveney vociferously. And now we'll have Fianna Fáil TDs having to suck it up and support Simon Coveney during the week. And yet Varadkar has kind of, the Taoiseach has all but escaped from all of this, you know. And indeed, with the release of of his text recently, many would have seen that he kind of threw his own minister under the bus at that time as well. So I suppose there has to be some payback for all of that when you think about it. But for the challenge for Sinn Féin is going to be, as you've outlined there, it's going to be, how are they going to deliver on what they have promised over all this time? And whatever you might say, I thought one of the things that was interesting, I think it's in the Red Sea poll today, is the stats on the age breakdown there. You would naturally expect to see Sinn Féin leading the way in the 18 to 34 age group, as they are. But I noticed that in the 35 to 54 age group, they're at 38%.
Wow.
With Fine Gael at 24 and Fianna Fáil at 10.
That's an enormous lead for that. That's a very, very large age group.
Isn't it? Like, that's a really, really significant figure. And in the over 55s, you would expect, obviously, Fine Gael at 41. I think Fianna Fáil, I actually just don't have the stat here to hand, but Sinn Féin are at 20. And that's still significant enough, you know? Like, you can it can. I know Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going for older voters, and clearly that's where their strengths lie at this point in time. That's obviously a massive concern for them, particularly for Fianna Fáil. But there is no doubt that that figure alone should buoy Sinn Féin, and it should make them feel a lot more confident than they would have had in the past that they could actually make a breakthrough in the next election whenever it comes. In many ways, they have stolen Fianna Fáil's clothes so successfully in the kind of the Republican reform, but also the kind of the social area as well. And they're seen to deliver on the ground, and they have an amazing network in place at this stage. You'd have to say you can see them making that breakthrough in a way that you never did before. Yeah. And I think there's a sense increasingly among people that they'll just want to give them the chance to see if they can deliver on all the promises they've made.
It definitely means that there's that much more pressure on the likes of the Housing for All plan to make sure it does come through. The full age breakdown for the 55 pluses, Fine Gael have 41% of voters above that age category. Sinn Féin 20% and Fianna Fáil 14%, which I suppose must be quite worrying for Fianna Fáil if that was
a
segment of society that historically would have always come through for you, particularly because they do tend to show up on the day as well. John, one point that strikes me as you read all of this is that these are the final polls as we officially mark the end of recess, because the Dáil is back on Wednesday. And I thought one of the truisms was that government parties always did better in summer because there wasn't quite as much scrutiny. One would suspect now that with the Catherine Zappone controversy and everything else that's been going on for the last 8 weeks, this is a massive opportunity lost for the government parties to be able to present a calm image and to try and maybe consolidate some of their popularity.
Another political truism out the window. It's quite an achievement to have lost support over the summer, but particularly Leo. You know, Leo Varadkar is one of the most compelling people we've ever had in Irish politics. He dominates the stage. He knows how to manipulate the media. And that's not necessarily a negative thing. He has come to the leadership of Fine Gael with promises. That personality of his and that profile of his would bring them great success. That has proven to be untrue. That has proven to be a false promise. Fine Gael, if they have been promised that they will rise in popularity due to Leo Varadkar, they have now seen over the summer period, their first summer recess, as you pointed out, at a time when traditionally governments would increase in popularity. And we see in some of the polls that Fianna Fáil have, in fact, increased their popularity. Yeah. Fine Gael has fallen.
In relative terms, though, because this is a Leo Varadkar who led Fine Gael to just under 21% in the election last year. And depending on which polls you now look at, it's somewhere between 23 and 28. So it's an improvement on where they actually were when people went to the polls 18 months ago.
For a political correspondent to say he doesn't have huge faith in polls probably would be throwing my dinner out. But yeah. Fine Gael,
the next time there's an Ireland Thinks poll, I will pay no attention to it.
Well, they're a good one. Yeah. At this period in the electoral cycle, it's difficult to get a full guide from polls in that sense. The clearest and most definitive poll we had was 18 months ago.
Yeah.
And Fine Gael did very, very badly in that.
For the first time ever, they came third. First time ever.
They did, but if you were to go back historically, and I know we're in a different historic period, Fine Gael has not, in a way that Fianna Fáil has been, Fine Gael has not traditionally been a large party. If you go back over 30, 40 years, they're regularly in the 20% area. But as recently as 2016, much maligned, and a man you know more about than any of us here, having written a book about him, Enda Kenny, had 54 seats, was it, in 2016?
50 seats that time, when he won the election with 25.5% of the vote, which I suspect is a percentage that Fine Gael would be quite pleased to put in the back right now.
What would any of the major parties, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, or Fianna Fáil, give for that now? So Leo Varadkar, I think, is a big problem. We all got a bit... Fianna Fáil still is... Now, whether they will be in 10 years is another thing, and that's what they've been, the angst has been among them for the last 18 months, still is a large national movement. Fine Gael has not been that. Fine Gael was reliant on moving into a new professional era. And I think the next couple of days we will see some very outspoken questioning of Leo Varadkar's leadership. It has not been a success thus far, and I think he would admit this himself. You speak to people around him that since probably summer of 2020, summer of 2019, because of COVID, we're all mixed up in our years. But
the last summer before the election.
Yes, everything he has touched has not gone well. Because there is a feeling in Fine Gael that the popularity was so high back then, had they gone to the country, then things would be different. And since then, he is... there is, lastly, on Leo Varadkar, there is an air of, and two more dissimilar men one cannot imagine, of John Major's government in late 96, 97, about this, about Fine Gael at the moment, and there are parallels between the Tories and Fine Gael, that every small crisis and every small scandal they touch or create becomes turbocharged. And small... allegedly small issues, be it a questioning about a leak inquiry, and that may expand into something bigger, of course, and more serious. It becomes a massive, massive problem. And what we've now seen today is a rather unprecedented fall in the personal ratings of the Taoiseach.
Well, the one parallel that you could draw between a John Major government of 1996 and a Leo Varadkar participant government of now is that it's a party which has been in power for longer than it's ever been unbroken.
That's part of the problem. That has to be part of the problem. You know, when you think about it, that's particularly why the Sapone affair has trundled on throughout the summer, because they just didn't do enough quickly enough to knock it on the head. And part of that is just down to the fact that they're there too long, I suppose, in a way, and that they haven't, they're residing completely in the bubble at this point in time, and just didn't have the wherewithal to see the potential that could bring, the potential damage it could do, and particularly Simon Coveney, which is extraordinary when you think of the politician that he is, and that he's kind of getting landed with this seems incredible, but he's absolutely the master of his own misfortune. And this is all down, a lot of it in my mind is down to the fact that they are there so long.
I'm going to get you to hold that thought about Leo Varadkar in particular, because when we come back, we have to discuss the one outstanding issue that was never resolved from election 2020, which is what we're going to do about the pension age, because it seems that Leo Varadkar, despite having agreed to farm it out to a commission, has his own ideas about that. Eamon has been in touch using the hashtag OnTheRecordNT. He says that until there's an agreement between the left-leaning parties in this country, nothing much will change. The left will end up poaching the same ground election after election, and they'll end up cancelling each other out instead of cancelling out Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, which is probably, I suppose, the origin of the vote left, transfer left ethos that materialised last time around. And Shaggy, who I presume is not the same Shaggy who usually croons about Carolina or how it wasn't him. God, if ever there was a statement in Irish politics, it wasn't me. It would be Shaggy. Fianna Fáil had all the media attention they could want in their thinking last week, and it all ended up being about micro-protests. A party with no identity, a lack of confidence in party leadership, and the party leader threatening sanctions if they don't vote for the opposition next week. That's a fair way of putting it. 53106 is the number for your text if you want to get in touch. The hashtag, as I said, is on the record NT. Still have Sheila Riley and John Lee in studio. And John, I wanted to come to you because you have authored the front page story this morning on the Irish Mail on Sunday about Leo Varadkar's bid to buy back votes, that perhaps just when his own personal star is beginning to fall, that he's going to use the occasion of the Fine Gael think-in in Trim to launch a bid to win back public support with a raft of what you're calling new vote-grabbing measures at Fine Gael's think-in. What are the measures and how is he going to pay for them?
Discussions that we had yesterday weren't particularly cogent and clear on how things were going to be paid for, but sure, what does that matter? What does that matter anymore? He speaks about that now. It's news because people at the top of Fine Gael have put it out there. It's a rehashing, and we see a lot of that, of a long-standing commitment to look after middle-income people who we believe...
They repeatedly get up early in the morning.
They have tried to keep... Fine Gael have repeatedly said they've tried to keep taxes low for that cohort, yet in the same breath... Leo Varadkar will tell us that we have the fourth highest tax rates across the board in the developed world. What is a little newer is that we are told that the Taoiseach will oppose his own government's long-reaching pension reforms. Which is quite an achievement.
But that's a reform that a focus group or a committee or a commission, whatever you'd call it, that he agreed to set up to try and examine what we do about the pension age. It's come back with ideas and he's immediately saying, I'm not doing that.
Well, the cabinet haven't discussed it yet even. So we don't know. We do know what Leo's stance will probably be. So
there's a fair idea then. We know what stance might be enforced upon Heather Humphreys if she's so minded to take it.
Well, you know, we'll see. Heather Humphreys is tough enough, and she'll take it as a report, and we're always told the reports. But this is to reform to deal with a thorny political issue, which is raising the pension age. That is projected now out to 2028, 2032, if you read some of it as well. How that is expected to be funded is through heavy increases in PRSI on the self-employed. Leo Varadkar will say that is not something he supports, and in fact he's opposed to it. He will be entitled to do that in this particular sense, that he is the Minister for Business, essentially Enterprise and Employment, so he will fight the cause of the self-employed, who he would feel took a particularly heavy blow during the pandemic.
Well, and in fairness as well, haven't Fine Gael governments only just managed to finish a very, very long-running process of trying to straighten out the tax credits so that self-employed people now get the same tax credits as other employees because they were often discriminated against? And having just managed to close the book on that, the idea of hiking up PRSI on them at a penal rate doesn't really seem like a runner either.
No. And you know, again, we can kind of raise our eyebrows, as some do in the political sphere, at Leo doing what he's doing, but he is sticking up for those who vote for him. excuse me, in many ways, and have voted for him in the past. There is something new there as well. There's one for everyone in the audience, a bit like the housing plan, that we are told, we were briefed, that he will also want to see significant social welfare hikes, not fully defined, for those who have suffered. One could assume, one would believe that includes pensioners who are particularly affected by inflation. We've seen the highest rises in inflation in Europe since the early 2000s, mid-2000s. I think the euro rate is 3%. It's to a 2.8% in Ireland, which is something we... Yeah. One wonders, not to get too all over the place on it, is a reflection of the waning influence of Angela Merkel. Nevertheless, in stark contrast to how Fianna Fáil conducted their thinking, which I think was a useful process, where they would say Leo has gone for the old rapier thrust of using that thinking, which starts tomorrow in your home county, of buying a few votes, attracting a few
and
votes.
And a fine venue and a fine town to put it in as well. Sheila Riley, one thing that I'm reminded about immediately, you're looking at Leo Varadkar going to a think-in and promising, you know, are looking to try and increase welfare payments in advance of the budget, ruling out any increases for the underemployed, pushing for tax cuts in other certain areas as well. It's, I don't know how many months since the Fine Gael Ardèche, where Leo Varadkar announced that they were going to increase the housing delivery target to 40,000 units a year. And then I interviewed him for this program and he said, oh, well, you know, it's not really government target yet, it's just party target. And we're talking to the other government parties about making it happen. Lo and behold, Housing for All comes out and the target is not 40,000, it's 33. So is all of this, and far be it for journalists to complain about media manipulation, but is all of this not just cheap headlines at an opportune time?
Yeah, it's trying to take back the narrative, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's trying to take ownership of where this is all going, and you can see why they might want to, or why Fine Gael in particular and Varadkar in particular would want to. And we've talked about the polls earlier, and it's in the background against all that you're looking at this. Of course, this is about, like, if you look at the papers today, if you look at the headlines today, you know, you have Matthew O'Toole on the front of the Independent, so we're reminded of the leak story.
Yeah.
We have the Fáilte Ireland issue on front of the Business Post, so we're reminded of the Catherine Zappone affair. You know, like, these stories haven't gone away, to say the least. So there has to be some attempt, you can understand why, to try and take back, to take control of where it's all going, and obviously to try and claim some of the headlines ahead of this think in. I think if there were going to be serious kind of, I suppose, what do you want to say, forensic analysis of where Fine Gael are going in this world at in trim, in the next couple of days, I think kind of the impending motion of no confidence in Simon Coveney might taper that, because it can't be too much criticism from within the party of each other, and then to go out and sort of put a united front to the people a couple of days later when you're all voting in support of Simon. So that probably has tapered maybe. And in the long term, that could be a bit a loss for them in a way, because I think the Fianna Fáil thinking in Cavan definitely was a cathartic exercise for them. Everybody got a chance to talk over the, what, 14 hours was it or something
yeah,
like that?
It was all supposed to be done in one day and they ended up running over 2 days. So a lot internal briefings on the likes of the budget or the likes of Housing for All got canned because they needed more time to vent their spleens at each other.
But I think they were right to do it that way, because in doing it that way, they have aired it all out there. And, you know, I think it was a very clever move to get them in, get them talking, take the phones off them so they couldn't talk to anybody else.
Yeah. And until they all had to come out for their tobacco or toilet breaks, at which point there was a captive audience there
but
in front of them.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so that's allowed them to do that. Fine Gael aren't going to get that opportunity now. And in a way, I think that's probably a miss for them, particularly at the start of the term and particularly at this point and particularly in the background against the backdrop of these polls.
I should have made this observation actually when we were talking about Fianna Fáil earlier, but one thing I really enjoyed was Micheál Martin, the best comeback he had to the idea of there being internal dissent among his leadership was that he's been a member of the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party for 32 years and he can never remember unanimity. And then in the very next sentence he said, you know, the one thing that's important is that we come out of this united. So what he said is that in 32 years we've never been united, but what's really important is that you all get behind me now. Again on the Fine Gael point though, John, I don't mean to ask you the same question twice, but I've just you know, this is a peak
your
Gav
show
moment here now, but I've just pulled up the summer economic statement. They're talking about us being 20 billion in the red this year, and it'll be a couple of years before we're even close to being anything close to a balanced budget. And you wonder, just in the course of all of that, how any leader could honestly go out and stay with a straight face that they want to try and cut your taxes.
Well, that is what Leo Varadkar has done. You know, there has been a worldwide reformation in how we deal with money. The EU has begun quantitative easing in a fashion that it wasn't permitted to do 10 years ago. If you read some of the, I scoot through them, some of the more august journals, they will tell you that the fashion in which money is dealt with and how debt itself is perceived is disappearing. So the government seems to have found a bottomless pit of money to get us through a pandemic, and still Leo Varadkar believes this is possible. Certainly austerity, which Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were cheerleaders for, has been forgotten. Angela Merkel, who was the great power in Europe, is leaving. Her opposition to, and the traditional deep-seated German opposition to allowing inflation to increase going back to the 1930s, and their experiences there has gone. Maybe there are going to be income streams there that we're not quite aware of still. You know, a budget is a budget. Now, whether we're going to see, whether it's possible to see tax cuts in the next budget, I just can't see it. And then one would have to question whether Fine Gael and this briefing we've all gotten this weekend is a hint of desperation. And one would think it is. And one thing I would say that Sheila pointed out correctly, that Fianna Fáil had decided to discuss their futures, and was a great thing.
Yeah,
they did also on the hoof tear up their agenda, because it wasn't planned by the leadership to spend 2 days at it. And Fine Gael, taking that precedent, I spoke to a cabinet minister last night, said they were very affected by how cathartic, as you say, and how effective the Fianna Fáil method of dealing things, which is what these thinkings should be about. In the modern age, we can get speakers anywhere we want to go. There might be a little more of that at Fine Gael than we imagine. They've a barbecue tonight and they get all their socialising out of the way. And then they may tear up their agenda and want to discuss what, let us not forget, this was a Fianna Fáil discussion about a fairly disastrous general election.
Yeah.
Fine Gael's was
but
worse.
But at least they've taken it on. They've had a look
seats.
At it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fine Gael's was worse.
Yeah, Fine Gael's was worse. And I think that often gets lost, actually, in the whole discussions of when you're looking at the last election, because there's so much focus on Fianna Fáil and how badly they did. People actually forget Fine Gael did worse.
Yeah, 20.9% in the last general election, which was its lowest share of the vote in any general election ever. And it was the first time ever that they haven't been in the largest two parties.
Did they lose 12 seats that time?
They did. did indeed. The one other Leo Varadkar related story, actually, before I sort of close the book on the Fine Gael part of this discussion. It's mentioned in the front page of the Sunday Times. It's the letter that was written by Leo Varadkar's partner to the Irish Times yesterday, basically suggesting that the pictures of him doing the rounds last weekend, attending a music festival in London on his own time, effectively amounted to cyberbullying. Sheila, I don't even know where to start other than, do you agree or do you think it's fair game if somebody says in Ireland you can't do that and England isn't the model to follow and then goes to England and pursues the same service?
Okay, where to begin with this? Yeah, I don't think it's cyberbullying. No, you're a politician, you're out there. That's the reality of it, you know. In the same way as, was there photos of Michael Gove dancing in the Aberdeen nightclub? I didn't.
There's video of him, actually.
Oh, God, like I never looked it up because really there's only so much somebody needs to see in their life.
Train spotting. it was fantastic.
So, if there's video of Michael Gove dancing in the Aberdeen nightclub, well, then surely
I'm
there's
glad
pictures.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
that's all
exactly.
Say.
Yeah, I am too. But no, I don't accept cyberbullying. I think he's out there, and that's the reality of it. It's part and parcel of the job, and that's the nature of it. He's entitled to a private life and go to events. Of course, he is. Any of us could have gone, were we minded to, last weekend to London. Yeah, but at the same time, it is not. If you ask me. In keeping with where he should have been, it wasn't appropriate. It was a bit tonally deaf, to say the least, when you consider where we are. I know he has been a good supporter of the hospitality industry and has been quite vociferous in his support of them, to be fair. But at the same time, I just did not think it was a good message, to be quite honest. I just thought it was inappropriate.
John, your thoughts?
Well, fame is a fickle thing. You might find it fades pretty quickly. What I often find with these discussions is that politicians or well-known people want to choose the image of themselves that is distributed at that time. Leo Varadkar has participated, friends of his have tweeted and put on Facebook and other things, his attendance at concerts. We think of the controversy over the LCD sound system with that Gavin. And what was the other one he was? Kylie, let us not forget Kylie Minogue. So, you know, when the picture is posed and chosen by him and put in social media, that's fine. This one, and it's mentioned in the letter, was not the most edifying of positions. You know,
but even whether the picture was flattering or not, the idea that he can be photographed doing something on his private time, which is his own private time, but which runs contrary to the general theory or the general tone of the messaging that he's behind his government.
This might be a controversial thing to say. When you reach the highest office in the land, as he has, as Taoiseach, He is now Taoiseach. He will be Taoiseach again. You ask Brian Cowan, did he get much private time? Ask Bertie Ahern, did they get much private time? There are payoffs. And when you're in that position, I would think in Fine Gael, if they were to ask themselves whether it was a wise move for their leader at a time where the leaders in this country, don't forget Dara Cleary, for instance, a year ago, and let's not go back over all that, lost his job because he did something which is still questioned and open to question by the courts that was deemed wrong in the midst of a pandemic. The pandemic is not over. Whether it is correct to lecture the Irish public, as you're entitled to do in your position, to do one thing and then do something that is perceived as being something different, I don't think it's a wise thing to do politically. And again, I think it'll affect him politically.
Do you think it'll get raised in trim?
The event in
and his attendance at it.
Absolutely. Like there was talk of that Fianna Fáil hadn't necessarily, you know, gone for Micheál Martin, but they were the TDs were critical of how the leadership have handled themselves. And undoubtedly, talking to Fine Gael backbenchers, they are very, very upset. They're livid about this Opponent affair and the effect it has had on them and their constituencies. And this myth that it's not raised in the constituency, and you discussed it in your show last week with Fergus Finlay, is that it's a myth. And this was yet another gaffe.
But do you know, can I just...
He shouldn't have gone there at all, in my opinion.
Make a point. Justine McCarthy has a very good column this week in the Times, in Sunday Times, about Leo Varadkar's attendance at this. And she does make the point that, you know, the focus is on this, and she doesn't necessarily agree with that, with the folk, and she kind of thinks there's a lot of begrudgery at play here. But in reality, there are bigger issues at play. And like, for example, and she cites the issue of the question over the freedom of information requests made in relation to the Sapone affair. Yeah. And then Leo Varadkar subsequently releasing his texts after journalists were told that there was no such correspondence, there was no correspondence to be found in relation to it, and that this has kind of happily slid down the agenda. And that actually is a very important point, because this is a really serious issue. Like, is the FOI fit for purpose or is it not? Like, I mean, I think we all kind of know the answer to that question here. But at the same time, you know,
there are also laws around it.
Exactly.
As well,
yeah, it's a legal issue. So, and it kind of has disappeared in under the ether of something that's more kind of sexy, if you like, and social media friendly than, you know, the boring ins and outs of the FOI.
And that's the gist of Justine McCarthy's piece. She says that if people want entertainment, let them read The Dandy, but for the sake of the country, we could do without the diversionary clutter because of all the other legitimate issues that surround Simon Coven and Leo Varadkar as well. We're going to come back after this quick break and we're going to try in as many minutes as we have to figure out Fianna Fáil's identity crisis. Don't go away. Still have John Lee and Sheila Riley in studio. And in the fairly limited time that we have available to us, Sheila, we want to try and tease out some of Fianna Fáil's identity issues and, put simply, whether there's any way that you complain that your identity is being increasingly tangled up with that of Fine Gael when in 3 or 4 days' time its members are going to troop through the lobbies and vote confidence in a Fine Gael minister.
Oh yeah, that's a big issue for them for sure. You know, there's absolutely no doubt about it. Kind of like trying to extract themselves from Fine Gael while at the same time spending the summer kind of shoring them up and coming out defending them or ending up defending them is a massive difficulty for them. I think out of the thinking in the last couple of days, they will have a lot of the talk has kind of centred not just on the leadership, and that's definitely been one of the issues, obviously, but obviously on kind of where are they going and where have they found themselves in the last couple of years in particular. And in the Business Post today, Daniel Murray has kind of very good sort of breakdown of what they talked about at the thinking. And he talks to Kevin Cunningham, who's a lecturer in politics and in DIT. He was one of the academics who provided some analysis for the review, for Sean Fleming's review. And he makes the point that Fianna Fáil, because they've kind of had less defined positioning over the years, the diplomatic way of that they're putting it here, it means they're now being squeezed on all sides. And this is it. Like, it's back to who are they? What do they stand for? Where do they find themselves? You know, what do they mean to the people? And they need to define that now. They need to find that. What does that mean?
What I think is
a
more interesting question is,
that?
Is it seemed ambiguous from that report whether it was that members couldn't articulate what their identity was or rather that they didn't know.
I think they don't know. I think they're kind of lost in a way, and a little bit tangled up in Sinn Féin coming at them on one side, you know, Fine Gael there on the other side, and that increasingly over time that they kind of have all of their clothes have been taken by everybody else, and that they have less to show for, that they've less to stand for as a result. I think they have a serious identity issue in that regard for sure, and that the focus on the leader then in the last couple of days is just, or in the last number of months or since the election, is kind of, you know, it's a secondary issue really to where they should find themselves. If they're serious about bringing this party into the future, like a future for Fianna Fáil in like 10 years, not just the next election, 10 and 20 and 30 years, bearing in mind they're 100 years old, I think, in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, then now is the time to do the serious talking, because they haven't really done that. I think they've focused on short-termism, on getting through election after election, and not really been serious about where they want their party to go. They have a serious issue with gender. They don't have half enough women. They're going to seriously struggle to put forward candidates in the next election, female candidates in the next election. They have some great councillors around the country, but increasingly you find a lot of women don't want to go forward because it's such an absolute bear pit. And they have a serious problem with youth as well. I mean, they're just not attracting kind of younger voters. And one of the issues that are identified, one of their TDs identifies there, is that they need to be seen to be all over housing. I do think that's a great one for them. Yeah. A great potential for them.
They need to deliver, though, don't they?
Yeah, they went to an election last year and they didn't have enough on housing. And as a result of that, then they got, walloped for it, you know. So,
John, you've been taking very furious notes there. Can unload your treaties.
What Sheila was saying, what interests me most, of course, what Sheila said there was, you know, there are questions about what Fianna Fáil ever stood for. But they wouldn't agree with that. I went through the report by Sean Fleming. I got a glance at it. A couple of things he referred to, which makes sense, I think, when you look at their current predicament. Firstly, he said in the past, Fianna Fáil had taken a particular stance on the national issue.
And other parties had have taken their clothes there. That is an issue that has receded into the past in some ways, and has morphed. It is not something they can grab a hold of anymore to define themselves. Secondly, which wasn't mentioned in the report, what Fianna Fáil stood for was being in power. Simple as gaining it, maintaining it, and distributing patronage all over the place, which is the greatest power available to you as the party of government. They now see themselves having Fine Gael distributing that patronage without even consulting them. The concentration on the leader and his future relates again, and I keep going back to it in football parlance, results results count. It was the performance of the party in the general election that took up an awful lot of the time and the discussion in Sleeve Russell. It takes up an awful lot of the report. The leader is responsible for a general election campaign. It's Irish politics and politics worldwide has become in parliamentary democracy has become a presidential thing. And the general election campaign was a disaster.
Well, one thing that struck me... Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry, but that when Micheál Martin was asked about the party's identity and he tried to give a 30-second summary of it at the Thinking a couple of days ago, the one thing that struck out was that he wanted a strong state, which I think means, you know, a high-taxing, high-spending state, which is a pretty crowded field to be in. So if you're going to be in coalition with Leo Varadkar, who wants to cut taxes and increase PRSI left, right and centre, and you're trying to be a strong state and you've got all these other opposition parties promising the sun, moon and stars, that seems like it's going to be a very, very hard sell.
Big state is, as we discussed earlier in the programme, is something that, without much discussion, has increased its strength across the globe. And Donald Trump, that cheerleader of republicanism in recent years, he didn't brook the massive financial injections into the economies that happened in the United States. Micheál Martin has never struck me as a man of small state. He has done very, very well in certain areas, Micheál, and I think there is that angst in Fianna Fáil is fascinating as a microcosm of what is going on in Irish society. You know, again in that report that Sean Fleming put together, there is a deep criticism of the party's conduct during the referendum on the 8th. And Micheál Martin, where he might be conservative in some areas, as you point out, and on his stance on the state and the finances that go into it and everything else, he was probably never given the credit he deserved for it. He was a frontiersman when it came to the 8th, that he dragged his party in many ways. And there was a much longer political journey for him than there was for Leo Varadkar on that issue. So, the criticisms on Micheál Martin come on the election and that'll have to change.
I'm amazed that in the minutes that we had available, we didn't manage to solve Fianna Fáil's identity crisis, but maybe they'll figure it out in time for Wednesday night when they have to vote confidence in Simon Coveney. We're out of time. Sheila Riley and John Lee, thank you both very much for joining me in studio this morning.
On the record
with Gavin Riley
on News Talk.